welcome in. Latest episode of that SEC podcast. I'm your host, Michael Brennan. Go by SEC Mike. Go on the Twitters. And there he is, our great friend, Stephen Lassen, the senior editor over at Athlon Sports. Stephen, how are you?
Mike, I am doing great, my friends. Good to be talking some SEC ball here. The calendar is June, but man, it feels like the college football news cycle never ends. And oh, by the way, Mike, I spent most of my weekend reading this glorious magazine. So all is well here. How was the weekend your way?
Oh, my weekend was excellent, Stephen. Thanks to my cover of the Athlon Sports Preview magazine. And they didn't send me the trash Arch Manning one. So I appreciate you, Stephen. That came courtesy of Stephen. And we've got 10 Athlons being mailed out to fortunate cousins that reached out, and Stephen has signed those. So those are coming your way, cousins. If you haven't gotten them already, you will be getting them this week, I would imagine. And why don't you tell them, Stephen, for the cousins that maybe were not the select few that got the autographed Stephen Lassen edition, limited edition, I guess we could call it. If they're not getting a limited edition Lassen, the Sasson Lassen edition, how can they get their hands on their own Athlon Sports?
Mike, there's two ways to get it. The best way is athlonsports.com. If you go to our website, there is a link at the very top. It says magazines. You click on that. It takes you to our online store. The best part about this is if you're an Oklahoma fan that lives in Maine and you can't find the John Mateer cover, we can ship it to you. So that is the best way to get it. You get whatever cover. We ship it to your doorstep. You don't have to fight the grocery store. But if you do want to fight the grocery store traffic, and I do that occasionally, so I can't complain too much, it's on newsstands at places like Kroger. I found it at Publix. That seems to be the most the place that's had the most so far. Bookstores like Barnes & Noble, also Walmart, also I think supposed to carry it as well. So newsstand or athlonsports.com, the best place to buy it.
Oh, and I didn't tell you this, Stephen. I saw an Athlon at Target the other day.
Nice. So I guess Target, add Target to that mix as well. I will say, you know, I'm a pretty avid magazine buyer and reader, and I have been constantly frustrated when I go to these places and the newsstand is getting like considerably smaller and smaller, which is why I kind of resorted to just ordering online. But it's always good to see them out at like Target, Kroger, I think like CVS, Publix. Like those seem to be the places that people are finding them, the best place to get them. But like I said, if you want a specific cover, we can mail it to you at athlonsports.com.
Hey, shout out Liquid. He said he got his cover or his edition, the limited Lassen edition. So shout out our buddy Liquid. Appreciate you, Liquid, as always. And yeah, we appreciate the cousins. So we're going to get into it. Stephen wanted to talk best SEC offenses and defenses. We're going to kind of predict which are the five best in each category this fall in the SEC. Of course, I'm seeing the comments already. They want to talk Sorsby, so we're going to get into that. Steve is going to share his thoughts. But also wanted to remind the cousins, so we got the fall camp preview series starting this week. The winners last week, Georgia. So they're going to be, shout out Janet for all her donations. We're going to go Georgia tomorrow with cousin Shane. We're going to go Tennessee, thanks to Vol Tiger. And then we're going to go Ole Miss, thanks to Fred and David Chambers, were the big donators for Ole Miss. So those are the three teams we're going to be doing this week. If you want to get in on the action, you want your team, we're going to do it the same as last week. Whoever gives us the most donations for the week, we're going to get your team. So right now we're going to start with shout out Michael Dunlap, South Carolina homer. So South Carolina, as of right now, is going to be the following week's fall camp preview series. Is college football broken beyond repair, Stephen? What do you think? For anybody that missed it, and I assume everybody's seen it by now, but Brendan Sorsby, the gambling man, as we call him on this show, he has found a local judge, or I don't even know. I don't even think it's a local judge, but it doesn't matter. It's a Texas judge that has given him a temporary restraining order, which is allowing him to play, and it's my understanding is that the NCAA cannot block this. But again, I'm not a legal analyst, so I don't even know if and when that'll hold up. But Stephen, what are your thoughts on the gambling man Well, again, he didn't gamble once or twice. He literally gambled thousands of times, including, for those that don't know, he lives in Texas now, right? Where it's illegal to gamble. He has given money to people out of state to gamble on his behalf. I mean, this is against the law. Like, I think he can go to jail for this. So he might be Texas Tech quarterback out of jail. I don't know how this is going to happen, but thoughts on all this. I don't even know. I'm just flustered by the whole thing.
Mike, I thought the most absurd thing we would have to talk about this offseason was that 2014 playoff. This tops it and blows it out of the atmosphere, Mike. I mean, the reasoning is just laughable. He bet on football on his own team at Indiana. He was betting on sports at Cincinnati. And like you said, he was still doing it at Texas Tech. It's against NCAA rules. It should be the easiest slam dunk for a judge to rule, say, these are the rules. You broke them. Sorry, you can't play. I just, you know, when I see some, you read through the court filings and, you know, the reasoning is, well, he needs to be eligible because if he's not, then that means others won't come forward in the future. It will discourage reporting. Mike, it's complete nonsense. What discourages cheating against NCAA rules is having rules and also like ramifications for your behavior. So like none of this makes any sense. It makes sense to like 95% of the population, except for like Lubbock, Texas, and this judge. So the whole thing, to put it simply, Mike, is ridiculous. Michael brings up a good point about college football, which I think it seems like everything from Sunday to Friday kind of sucks and Saturday is awesome and you forget about it. But you don't really forget about it on Saturday because you're reminded that, oh, USC's playing Rutgers in a Big Ten game. You've got transfers everywhere. We'll have this storyline all season. So, yeah, college football is in chaos. And honestly, there's two different paths that this could go. Maybe it spurs the SEC and Big Ten to say, hey, we've got to do something. And maybe they start to look at collective bargaining and that kind of solves this problem. Or you know, there was the Senate bill that was recently proposed. Maybe that gets more traction as a result of this. I think the bottom line is the sport needs to have rules and it needs to be able to enforce those rules, whether that's eligibility and transfers. It's completely asinine that the sport is basically being ruled by local judges in these jurisdictions that can say, this player is eligible, this one's not. Oh, this one bet on his team, but he's going to suffer too much of a hardship, so he's got to be eligible. So maybe the most optimistic thing is this is so ridiculous that maybe it spurs some actual changes that benefits the sport in the future.
Is it too late, Stephen, to get Tennessee in front of this Texas judge for Joe? Why is everybody eligible but Joey Aguilar? Which, again, I didn't really buy Aguilar's case either. But if they're going to let everybody else be eligible, they might as well let Joey Aguilar be eligible.
Mike, I was wondering the same thing. Like in all of these cases, the player wins except for Joey Aguilar in Tennessee. Maybe Tennessee didn't find the right sympathetic judge. So that's the outlier in all of these. I'll throw out something else, Mike, that relates to the SEC. Do you think Lane Kiffin might be the happiest man in America right now and saying, Texas Tech's the biggest villain. You guys got this. So I'm going to go fade away for a few weeks and you won't hear about me. So I'm not the biggest villain anymore. It's Texas Tech.
I'm so glad you said that, Stephen, because I was thinking it this week. Like Kiffin, for anybody that's not paid attention to this, and if you haven't, you're probably a much saner person than I. But Kiffin has not been tweeting. He's been staying off social media. So he's letting all this blow over, his nonsense, calling everybody racist, and he's the greatest coach, yada, yada, yada. Well, now, I mean, that's old news here with Texas Tech. So, yeah, I think Texas is the biggest villain now in college football for the season, even more than LSU. And you're right. I think that helps LSU. But let me spin it to you this way, Stephen, because I don't disagree with anything you just said. However, if there is a silver lining, I think it's just the fact that this just makes college football even more in the limelight, so to speak. Now, for the wrong reasons, perhaps, but you get casual people being like, what the hell? Like, we're letting the guys gamble now. Now, all of a sudden, Texas Tech I mean, I'm not going to be watching it just because it's garbage Big 12. But I think for like a casual person, I think you maybe you'll tune in more. Maybe you either love them or hate them now. I don't know. I think it adds a little to the sport, and it just, we need villains. You know what I mean? Like Star Wars wouldn't be very good without Darth Vader. Batman would be boring without the Joker. And now that Texas Tech is the villain, whether we agree with it or not, you know, I think there's a case to be made that this kind of adds to college football in a crazy way.
Absolutely. I mean, think back just a couple years ago with Michigan and John and Jim Harbaugh, and think about how every week the focus was on that scandal, Jim Harbaugh, he was the villain. Like, it's not necessarily a bad thing to have villains. Like, it makes kind of the sport go. It's going to be like Texas Tech against the world this year because everybody's going to be cheering against them, assuming Sorsby suits up. And then you're going to have, you know, Tech, like I said, Texas Tech's going to be against everybody, but also other fan bases are going to be piling on the minute that they maybe lose to Houston in week three, or certainly when they get to the playoff, it's going to be like a motivation for all these other fan bases to pile on if they get shut out again in the college football playoff. So yeah, having villains isn't necessarily a bad thing. To kind of take the Kiffin side of this too, Mike, could you imagine if LSU landed Sorsby in the portal and you had Sorsby and Lane Kiffin on the same roster, like what kind of fireworks we would have had? So it's not necessarily a bad thing to have a villain, I think. And especially if it draws in casual people to watch college football. I was going to say, perhaps maybe, I don't know what the first betting thing's going to be to use, like, you know, Red Raider, Sorsby, some kind of code for to get your first bet this season. But at the same time, I think if you want to look at it from a like playoff perspective, it just makes Texas Tech better, assuming he suits up, which might actually help the SEC in a weird way, because I think if Sorsby didn't play, there was a path where BYU could also get into the playoff mix. I know you have two Big 12 teams, so maybe now Texas Tech is just so far ahead, which maybe helps like a team from the SEC get in there from an at-large perspective. So a lot of angles to this. I think they're college football's number one villain right now, and Lane Kiffin is probably very happy about that.
And then I don't know if you have seen this, Stephen, or any of the cousins have seen it, but ESPN has put out some interesting reporting that is one in particular that's related to the SEC, where apparently the athletic director at Georgia, Josh Brooks, has said Georgia refuses to play Texas Tech now in any sport, not just football, in any sport. I don't know how long that's, I don't know, you know, if that's all time, I don't know, but I just thought that was pretty fascinating. And then another one that I saw, which I think is, was Dan Wetzel at Yahoo, but he apparently talked with a Big 12 coach, and he said, well, hell, why don't we, what I should do, since gambling's legal now, is we should figure out a game that we could throw and have all our players, you know, bet on it. I mean, I know that sounds comical, but the precedent has been set, has it not, to where there's no repercussions. You know, if you're, you know, your players might as well get paid if they're, and I don't think he was talking about losing a game, but I think he was talking about not covering the spread and having his players profit from it.
I mean, at the most basic core, isn't like betting against like on your sport, on your team, just such a like common sense, like every other sport has been able to like enforce it. Like you see, like obviously Pete Rose in baseball, you saw this happening with the NBA a few years ago. You see some guys in the NFL get suspended. Like it's the most basic one. Like it's in the rules. It's a slam dunk. He should be not be able to play this year, should be suspended for the full season. Now that we have this reporting about Georgia, Mike, I'm actually hoping, like, do we get Georgia Texas Tech like in the quarterfinals this year to maybe see Kirby Smart and that defense go up against Brendan Sorsby and Texas Tech after this back and forth. So I guess, Mike, I don't know. It seems like this is over, like Sorsby's going to suit up, but it does feel like the Big 12 is going to, I think, have some kind of meetings around this in the next couple weeks, or maybe even this week. You're seeing this out of Georgia. You know, maybe there's enough public pressure. Maybe Brett Yormark, he kind of put out kind of like a middle of the road statement, the commissioner of the Big 12. I don't know if it's over, but it also feels like it would take something pretty dramatic for him to be sidelined at Texas Tech at this point this season. It seems like he's going to suit up outside of those first two games.
And this is what Stephen's talking about, you know, to reference Neuro Ultra says, this is just a temporary restraining order. It does not mean he's going to win this case, and he definitely should not. But, I mean, that's good. That's all good and well. But for those, and again, I'm not a legal scholar by any means, but from what I've read, he's 100% right. This doesn't mean he's going to win the court case, but this is literally the same as Diego Pavia, where the case is not set to be, I don't even know the term, but the case is not to be held for about 9 months to a year. The football season's in 3 months. Who cares if he loses the case? The season will be over. He could win or lose. It means nothing. The restraining order gives him the right to play until the case is concluded, not held, concluded. That's literally what Diego Pavia did. He had the restraining order. The case was never solved. Again, I don't know the words, but adjudicated. Yet he was able to play, and nobody sits here and was like, "Well, Diego didn't win his case." Like, no one cares. Like, I don't even think they did it because the season's over. There's no case to be had.
If I'm understanding some of the legalese correctly on this one, Mike, I think there is a chance they could ask, like the NCAA could ask for like an expedited appeal. Doesn't mean like expedited, doesn't mean like tomorrow. It could mean a while. So I think the bottom line is like it would take a pretty significant legal maneuver here or some sort of like conference or team action to reverse it at this point. So you're right. He may not win this once it goes through. I think the next set of like judges he would have to go through would actually all be like Texas Tech alum. So pretty friendly audience you'd be playing to in that courtroom. But it seems very unlikely that any kind of court domino is going to pop up this week that prevents him from playing this season. Whatever happens at the end of the season, Texas Tech doesn't care. They just care about him suiting up in week three against Houston and being there for the rest of the year.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think there's much more to be said on this nonsense for now, Stephen. But what's not nonsense is Stephen Up got his magazine, Stephen.
We showing up for them boys in Tuscaloosa. It's Stephen Up. Roll Tide.
Appreciate you, Stephen Up. He said, "Hey, got my magazine today. Thank you both very much. Haven't had time for a deep dive yet, but so far, so good." So we appreciate you, Stephen Up. Thank you for reaching out, and hopefully you get a lot of use out of that magazine. Limited edition, signed by... what if these start popping up on eBay? That would be funny, wouldn't it?
I think you'd have to pay somebody to take it.
And then shout out, Carl, appreciate you, buddy. Can we go back to Chick-fil-A bags and fast cars when the sport was honorable? Yeah, whatever happened to that, Stephen? Those were the days, right? Where, I mean, it's ridiculous. Wasn't there a time where, like, I think it wasn't that one of the Jim Harbaugh issues? Like, he bought somebody a cheeseburger or something?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, back in my day, that was a violation. You know what?
Also, like Terrell Pryor and the Ohio State crew, like changing like tattoos for like memorabilia. Like it just seems so quaint of like, oh, like, and also there's always the joke that goes around of how the NCAA had the very strict rules around like what kind of stuff could go on bagels and, you know, you couldn't feed athletes. Like all that seems like very minor now compared to the things that we're seeing now. We need the good old days of like, you know, penalties and like cash in McDonald's bags back to the bag. Get the bag man back, right?
Absolutely. Well, and shout out Robert. I mean, this is an excellent point too. Money line Mateer walked. So take the spread swords we can run. Yeah, it's funny how quickly that all came and went with old Mateer. You know what?
It did. It kind of quickly dissipated after breaking last off. Good for Oklahoma. I mean, imagine now if Mateer had been suspended for a significant chunk of the season and see what happened with Sorsby. Could you imagine how, rightfully so, how angry Oklahoma fans would have been?
Oh, yeah. Now, we're all angry when it's somebody else's player. You know what?
That's the problem. Like, the crux of the problem is, and you saw, I think, Greg Sankey and some other presidents around the SEC were saying this too, is like, do we want to be governed and do we want to have rules? Like, yeah, everybody wants to have rules for the other 137 teams, but when it comes to my team, no, we shouldn't play by the rules. Our local judge will be able to give us what we need. So that's the crux of the problem, is like everybody has to agree and they have to follow the rules, and regardless of whether it hurts your program or hurts a rival, you have to have a level playing field. And right now, that's not happening anytime soon, Mike.
Mm-hmm. Hey, one other thing, Stephen, I wanted to ask you about real quick before we get into the best offenses and defenses in football next season. This kind of, you know, came and went. Again, the news cycle is so quick here, especially with college football these days. But one thing that I just really wanted to get your thoughts on. Again, we got the Sorsby nonsense, but how crazy is college football? We got Coach O back at LSU. I mean, hell, it wasn't that long ago. They fired his ass. He get a huge buyout, and he said, which door you want me to walk out of? You know, but I love Coach O. I think he fielded the best team in college football history in 2019. You know, it's amazing how quickly you could go from the mountaintop to the outhouse, which he managed to do in record time there. But what's your thoughts on Coach O returning to old LSU?
I love it, Mike, for LSU. It's a brilliant move by Lane Kiffin. I mean, it's one of the few offseason PR battles he probably should win. Ed Orgeron knows the state of Louisiana. He's a top-notch recruiter. You know, having these kind of assistants you can add to your staff in an off-field role, kind of like assistant coach, assistant position coach, any kind of, I think, like institutional knowledge and value you can bring to your staff is a huge plus. And like I said, he gets that recruiting element too. We know he's good at developing defensive linemen. He's not a head coach. I think he's kind of like perfect in this role as like a position coach. So I think it's a big time, very, very good move for LSU all around.
How quickly can DeBoring get Saban in there to coach his defensive backs? You know what?
His defensive backs might be the position that needs the least amount of coaching this year, but maybe they could get in to teach front seven, maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
Well, I could see, you know, that would be kind of funny. You know, you mentioned with Orgeron, like Arnett's back at Mississippi State. Brent Pry, who was fired at Virginia Tech, is now the defensive coordinator. It would be kind of amusing to go through and just think of like a coach for each team that should come back. You know, like Houston Nutt come back to Ole Miss to coach like running backs or something.
Hey, shout out Carl. Appreciate you, buddy. He says, have y'all noticed Mike and Steven starting to favor each other? Uh-oh. I don't know if that's an insult to Steven or an insult to me. I don't know. Are we starting to look alike?
We've been in the same room together, right? A couple times, right? We do have a lot of the same hobbies, but, you know.
Well, we're technically cousins now. You know what? So there you go.
This is true. Yeah, I think Carl might be onto something, but we'll see, right?
All right, Steven, let's get into it. Let's get into the best SEC offenses, best SEC defenses. Which side would you like to start, offense or defense?
How about we start with offense, Mike?
Perfect. That's exactly what I did here. So how do you want to do it, Steven? I figured we'd kind of go in reverse order, save the best for the last. But would you like to start with your number five best offense in the SEC next season?
I will, Mike, and I will tell you, I had a hard time cutting my list from like 8 to 9 to 5. So there's like 3 to 4 offenses that didn't make my top five that if you told me they finished fifth or should be fifth, I'm not going to disagree with you. But Mike, speaking of the LSU Tigers, I have them fifth on my list of top offenses. And yes, this is a projection. I think they pretty much bottomed out offensively last year. I trust Lane Kiffin. I trust Charlie Weiss Jr. to produce a high-powered offense. We've seen it before. There's a lot of ingredients to like here. Sam Leavitt, if he produces like we think and he's healthy, I expect the run game to be better, expect the offensive line to be better. There's just a significant upgrade in coaching. And there's also a lot of pieces that could come together. So I think I'm going to bank on separating these last couple teams, 5 through 8. I like LSU with Sam Leavitt's potential at quarterback. And also I just trust Lane Kiffin. And that was kind of the deciding factor between 5 through 8 on my list.
Steven, would it surprise you if I were to tell you I didn't even consider LSU? What are we talking about, Steven? What are we talking about? We're buying into the hype with old Lane Whiffen. I get it. I mean, he is a outstanding offensive mind. I think Charlie Weiss Jr. has emerged as one of the best offensive minds in college football as well. Again, I don't know how serious, but he did garner some NFL overtures. So I think that says quite a bit of what coaches are seeing about what he's doing. But that's all good and well, Stephen. I always say the players matter more than the coaches. And you're working with a completely retooled offensive line in a new system. You lost all the receivers, essentially. Now, you do bring back Tre'Davious Green, tight end. But, again, I'm talking wide receivers here. The running backs are solid. But I think a lot of people are overrating them because of high school rankings. And then I'm not even sure how healthy or effective the quarterbacks are going to be. And I, you know, someone was in the mentions on the show yesterday, Stephen, saying, "Did you know Sam Levitt's 100%? He's running with blah blah blah." And I said, "You know, you sound like exactly like Florida people with DJ Lagway last year. You know, everybody's healthy, everybody's ahead of schedule, everybody's looking like a mate. They don't need to practice. You know what I mean? Like, come on now. So, this is not Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss. Been there for 6 years. This is year seven." This is a year one at LSU, trying to put all these pieces together. Top five offense. You're crazy, Stephen.
On the subject of Sam Levitt, a little bit of personal thing. Like I mentioned, I think I mentioned this before, like I had a foot injury one time and it took like years for it to get better. And I didn't have access to like the world-class training. But what I worried about is that re-injury factor. Like it is very easy to kind of hurt that situation again. So it was like, yeah, he could be healthy now, but what happens when like live action starts? Like what happens when you're facing Texas A&M's defense? What happens if you're on the road at Ole Miss? So I am worried about that. I just went with the projection here because, and I'll kind of, I'll throw out a few teams here. Like I like Alabama with Keelan Russell, but I just looked at that offensive line and rushing attack and thought I can't put him in there right now. Oklahoma really close in this conversation. Same thing for another team, which I think you're probably going to have coming up here. They were all separated by such small margins. And when I looked at some of these teams, I thought, man, LSU's got a lot of interesting pieces. And I know the receivers are new, but Jace Brown at K-State, you look at someone like Jackson Harris transferring in from Hawaii, gives them the big playability. Tre'Davious Green's going to be probably utilized better in this offense. So I like a lot of the pieces. And I like the scheme, and I trust Kiffin and Weiss. And that's kind of what put me over the top to put them at number five. So I get it, Mike. It's a projection. You can call me crazy, but I'm just dangerous words. And Lane Kiffin, I trust here.
Hey, shout out to what a name, Trailer Swift. Trailer, welcome to
the family.
Yeah, thank you, Stephen, for the assist. Thank you, Trailer Swift. Cool name. For joining the family. We appreciate you, buddy. How about, I have made fun of this to no end, Steven, and I'm going to keep doing it because it just shows how ignorant some people are. Tennessee, I ain't got no quarterback. Kippy Top, get the hell out of here. Don't you know anything about football? Don't you know anything about Josh Heupel? Steven, give me number five, Tennessee offense, and it'd be a hell of a lot higher if they had an experienced quarterback, but I've heard a wise man by the name of Steven Lassen say Tennessee's got a top 10 offensive line, perhaps in the country. I think Deshaun Bishop is, I believe, fourth most returning rushing yards in the Southeastern Conference that is back from last year. We've got Mike Matthews and Braylon Staley, perhaps one of the best 1-2 combo receivers in the Southeastern Conference. Ethan Davis at tight end. I think he's the most gifted tight end Heupel has worked with, and they've got depth at tight end as well. And yes, we don't know how good the quarterback's going to be at Tennessee. We don't even know who it's going to be. But all Josh Heupel does is every year is insert a new quarterback, and they manufacture ways to have success. So whoever that quarterback is, whether it's George McIntyre or Faison Brandon, he is going to be in. Circled with talent and experience, and I think they're going to set them up to be very successful. And hell, I mean, this time last year, people would mocking Joey Aguilar. Then he led the damn conference in passing. So I'm not suspecting that whoever Tennessee's quarterback is going to be that good, but they're very talented, and we got to see it play out. Hell, I'd put him higher if I knew how good the quarterback was going to be. But Josh Heupel, he gets the benefit of the doubt for me.
100% agree about that. I think Tennessee was actually the team I was deciding between LSU and Tennessee. And, you know, for similar reasons, Mike, I mean, you give Kiffin the benefit of the doubt. You have to give Heupel the benefit of the doubt. Tennessee's been top two in the SEC in scoring offense in back-to-back years. And if you go, you know, beyond that, you know, maybe there's a little bit of up and down in the scoring statistics, but I think we know and trust Heupel that regardless of who the quarterback is, he's going to build that offense to the strengths. I mean, like you said, Deshaun Bishop, Staley, Matthews, Ethan Davis, great offensive line. The quarterback can almost be like a point guard. And also, I think as the season goes on, whether it's Brandon, whether it's McIntyre, Aguilar was rock solid at times, obviously put up the big numbers. You could argue these two quarterbacks have a much higher ceiling in terms of like long-term talent. Like, do they reach that this year? I think that's the big question. But I had Tennessee sixth on my list, so I think we're in the same atmosphere of thinking here. I'm not too worried about the quarterback situation. I think Tennessee's pieces and Heupel's track record kind of overcome my concerns about where that quarterback situation ends up.
I think Derek nailed it here. Cousin Derek, Heupel can carve up two things, opposing secondaries and all-you-can-eat buffets. So you better believe it. He's locking in on carbs and locking in on film this offseason. You know what?
What do you think? You think Heupel's a Cracker Barrel guy, or do you think?
I think so. He's from up in, what is it, South Dakota, North Dakota, one of them Dakotas. But if you're a Dakota folk, I think you're a big fan of those type of establishments.
Can't go wrong with an all-you-can-eat breakfast buffet, right?
Yeah, I have. As I get older, I've learned to. I try not to eat very much in the morning.
Yeah,
and I would imagine Heupel needs to follow my lead here, but we can save that for another day. All right, number four offense, Stephen. Where are you going there?
I am going to College Station, Mike. I'm going Texas A&M. I am a little bit concerned about the offensive transition with Holman Wiggins taking over. Obviously, would like to see Marcel Reed rebound from the Miami game. Where does this game develop overall? First time OC, quarterback with questions. Certainly some concerns there for me. But also, this gets at a word that I think I've been kind of hinting at all night. There's a trust factor for me with Mike Elko. And I think that Elko has done a great job in the portal, on the recruiting trail. I look at this offensive line and I do see, yeah, there are some questions, but you have guys who started in the SEC. You've got some younger players with upside. So it may not be as good as last year, but I do think eventually over the course of the season, it's going to end up in a pretty good spot. Like the skilled talent, Isaiah Horton to go with Mario Craver, Bethel Roman, Owens, Morrow at running back. So they could be higher if I felt I had a lot of confidence in Marcel Reed. But right now, I think four is a pretty good spot considering they averaged over 6 yards a play and over 30 points a game last year in the SEC. Have a lot of turnover on the offensive line and at coordinator.
Oh, and I should have note to the audience. I apologize for not mentioning this sooner. Now, Steven has not seen my list and I've not seen Steven's. So I always kind of like doing it that way just to see where we align. But I say that to say, Stephen, you're too good. I got A&M number four as well. Love everything you just said. But let me go back to yesterday's show. I don't know if you managed to catch any of that, Stephen, but we had on David Hale from ESPN. I think he does a heck of a job. I think he's quite arguably their best writer they have over there. But he said about Marcel, John Mateer, and Gunnar Stockton. He kind of put them all in their own kind of tier in the SEC when it comes to quarterbacks. They're good players. Heck, each of those guys got you to the playoff last year, right? So they're very good players. But the standard at Georgia, A&M, and Oklahoma now is to win a championship. And he's uncertain if those guys can get you there. Let's stick with just Marcel for right now. But Do you think that is a fair, and again, that's not a criticism. I think that is a fairly, accurate assessment. What would be your reaction to that?
I think all that's fair. I mean, I think of those quarterbacks, the one I have the most confidence in is probably Gunnar Stockton. But I think on Marcel Reed specifically, he's probably the one under the most pressure. It's just the way last season ended, that interception in the end zone against Miami. You've got a first-time play caller. You've got this transition on the offensive line. Everyone's kind of counting on you to sort of erase the end of last season, elevate your game, and take Texas A&M back to the playoff. I think they can, but I think there's going to be a lot of pressure just based upon the way the season ended and all this transition. And also just going to have to play better in those big time matchups, like the Miami game, the Texas game. Like, he's got to be better when they play the better teams in the league. And that's going to be a challenge given this year's schedule is going to be more difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. And, one thing. Now, this is kind of like what I've been kind of racking my brain about. Now, we have kind of discussed the offensive coordinator hired to death with Holloman Wiggins, going with an internal candidate. But someone that has been familiar with what they've been doing, familiar with the strengths and weaknesses of the players, and he sure as heck has gotten the most out of the receiving core. I mean, he is arguably the best receivers coach in the conference. So I'm certainly not saying he's a bad coach by any means, but I wonder, Stephen, if, now again, they were quite effective on offense last year, so there's logic to it. And certainly Mike Elko, I think, is one of the more intelligent coaches in the conference. But is there a case to be made that that Coach Elko is looking at this situation and saying, all right, let's just keep going with what's working? Whereas, you hire an outside candidate, maybe you raise the ceiling. Of course, you could completely whiff on the hire, and it could reverse course too. So, I mean, that's the gamble with all these guys. But do you think there's anything to be said for continuity and trying to maintain what we have?
100%. I think there is. But I also think there could be a danger of trying to be too cautious with this move, like being too trustworthy of your own like intuition. Like, yeah, he's been a great receivers coach. He's been in this room, but also at the same time, he is a first-time play caller in a program that's kind of like on the cusp. I mean, they made the playoff last year. I think just based upon the way they're recruiting, what we've seen at Elko, it's not going to be the last time that they get there. But I always think about like positive momentum, like trying to push the ball forward. We saw Oregon 2 years ago get bounced out of the Rose Bowl when they were the number one seed. They came back last year. They made it to the semifinals. Like, the next step is naturally like the national championship game. Texas A&M's next step is like to play for the SEC championship game and go further in the college football playoff. And that just gives me pause. Like, we're handing the keys to a first-time play caller. Yes, continuity, I think, is a good thing. In this case, given how effective they were, you have a quarterback who was in that system. You don't want to change much. Maybe you just want to put some tweaks on it. If you would have told me they'd gone out and gotten a handful of coordinators, I would probably have this offense just a little bit higher because of that trust factor that I think Elko knows what he's doing, but also would like the OC higher a little bit more. So that's kind of my pause with this team is I think another coordinator, based upon what we know, would probably be a better risk to elevate this offense in the SEC this season.
Mm-hmm. And I think in years past, Stephen, so A&M's only got one returning starter on the offensive line, and that's a center. That would be a kiss of death. And it may very well be because, that offensive line was good last year and it kind of paved the way for the success they had. But A&M is, I love the way they've attacked this to where they've had several guys in the system for a number of years, 2 or 3 years, and they've brought the vast majority, if not all those guys back to my knowledge. So they've got talent and they've went out via the transfer portal. Now, I think most programs of this caliber cannot do that where you got touted guys in the system that maybe it's their time, or if not, hey, so basically what they've done is they went out and at the very least bought themselves a backup offensive line is what I've tried to say. So either it's going to work out with the guys that they got via free agency portal, whatever you want to call it, or their young talent is going to come in and shine. I think that's the perfect way to attack when you have when you're losing four starters on the offensive line. What would you say to that?
I agree. I actually have not seen this happen too many times in the portal era where a team basically went out and got starters from the rest of the conference, like Texas A&M did, either starters or backups, and basically saying, you are going to be our bridge to the next like offensive line. Like our next younger stalwarts are developing, but you are the bridge. So if we get to the first week of the season, Mike, and I think all of those transfers they brought in are either like second team or they're just battling for position with the younger players. Like to me, that's a good sign. Because that would tell me like your younger players took that step forward, they developed, and they're ready to take the reins. I think it's also totally fine if like a lot of these guys end up starting. They have SEC experience. They're stepping into a conference they're familiar with. They're not going to be overwhelmed by the moment on the road in any of these venues. I mean, Wilcome Formby was starting playoff games for Alabama last year. They're in a pretty good spot, and I think that's a credit to Elko and sort of roster building of developing the next wave while also trying to fix the current with the transfers too.
All right, Steven, top three SEC offenses. Where are you going for number three?
I'm going Georgia, Mike. Certainly we kind of talked about the question about what the ceiling is with Gunnar Stockton in this passing game. I do think he as a quarterback and his play, he will be better in year two. The question is going to be, what does Georgia get out of its receivers? Like the playmaking ability, big plays. Georgia only had 7 plays of 40 plus yards last season. That has to improve if Georgia wants to win a national title. Some of that's maybe on Stockton. Some of that's on receivers, the offense, but it's got to get better. 36th nationally in success rate last season. And you just look at this, the pieces coming back. One of the deepest running back groups in the country. I actually think this offensive line is going to be pretty good this year. I think it's going to be one of the top groups in the SEC. So wide receiver concerns, explosiveness lacking, drop them to three. But there is a lot to like about this group with Stockton, running back group, tight ends, and offensive line.
You know, you didn't mention there, Stephen? Mike Bobo. Back for another season, the most polarizing coordinator perhaps in Southeastern Conference history. So I will have more to say on Georgia's offense here in a moment, but how about I went number three in my book, Stephen, and again, I don't know what to make of this team this year, but I think they'll be very good again. Give me Ole Miss. With Trinidad back, Kewon Lacy back, of course. We've got a new offensive play caller, John David Baker, he's been there before. He knows the system. He's probably familiar with a lot of these players. So, you know, it's not going to be a massive change by any means here. And maybe I'm a little even too low on them. I know they were, you know, red hot at the end of last season, but I just don't know if they're going to be quite as good. I don't know if we're going to get Trinidad, you know, playing out of his mind 12 games in a row. If they do, then they're going to be number one, you know? So I'm just the coaching continuity, losing a lot of receivers, losing offensive tackles, that all docks them in my opinion a little bit. But again, I'm putting you number three. I'm not saying you're going to be awful by any means, but I think that is I couldn't justify putting them any higher. What's your thoughts on that one?
I'm surprised. I actually thought you would have them number one, given all of the pieces coming back with Chambliss and Kewon Lacy. I think we share the same concern about this Ole Miss group. And I think one thing I always remind myself in college football is that, well, just because everything is coming back the same or largely doesn't mean it's still going to work out the same. Like it's hard to replicate what happened last year. Every season is its own entity. There could be some bumps in the road with coaching turnover. And I think that's my biggest concern is, yes, John David Baker has been at Ole Miss. I thought he was good at East Carolina, but play caller, like any kind of transition, any kind of tweaks, you got a bunch of new receivers, tackles question. It wouldn't surprise me if maybe there's a hiccup or two. So I didn't have them one as well, but I actually thought you would go with them at one just because of Chambliss and Lacey coming back.
Well, that's a big reason why I got them up there. So, again, number three, not by no means bad, but I can already see that they're getting angry in the comments. All right, number two for you, Stephen. Where would you go there?
We're going to Oxford, Mike. I'm taking Ole Miss at two.
Nice.
It is hard to doubt this group a ton. And so I did knock them some for the coaching transition. And like I mentioned, the offensive line concerns that I have at tackle. Now, maybe Chambliss is just ridiculously good and his mobility overcomes all of that. But, you know, you look at that schedule when you're playing a Texas defense, you're playing Georgia. I think Florida's defense would be better. Oklahoma, like there's a lot of opportunities here for defenses to disrupt Chambliss from the opening snap. So defenses also have a full year now of tape on Chambliss, and they might be better equipped to slow him down just a little bit. Not a lot, because he's still going to be one of the best quarterbacks in the country. 34 points a game last year in SEC play. That was second behind Tennessee. This is one of the most explosive offenses in college football, but I did have to knock them a bit because of my concerns about the new coordinator, transition, new pieces on the offensive line and receiving core.
Yeah, and you know, this is somewhat similar as we were discussing A&M. Not apples to apples, as they say, but because it is somewhat of a outside hire, even though John David Baker's been there before. But for this one, it makes sense because it's Pete Golding, defensive guy. You know, I know they still got Joe Judge there, but with all the transition, I think it was wise not to. He could have easily blown up the offense and said, let's do something different. But of course, I think that would have been foolish given all the talent they're returning. But the one thing that I've not heard a ton of people talk about that I think could be an issue, if you look at the analytics of John David Baker's ECU, that's where he was, I believe, ECU offenses, they were one of the fastest in the country, even faster than Ole Miss. And, you know, maybe you look at that and say, well, that's a good thing. You know, they're already used to the tempo and everything. But what that really does, it's near impossible to have a really good defense because they're going to get worn out, because the quicker your offense goes, the more snaps your defense is going to have to face. It's like the inverse of Brent Venables. he wants the least amount of snaps on his defense, which is smart, right? Because right. Now you play a 9-game SEC. You need your defense to be as fresh as possible to survive that. You need your defense to be fresh to make – that's a large reason why Ole Miss didn't win the national championship. They got guys banged up and they got a little worn down on defense at the tail end of the season. So playing that fast, you know, that is going to come at some toll on the defense. So that would be my biggest concern. And again, I'm kind of nitpicking here, but that is something that should be addressed, I think.
I think you have to nitpick, especially like these top three or so offenses in the league, because I think you can make a pretty compelling case for like a lot of these at one. I think the continuity angle for Ole Miss just makes a ton of sense because of what you have coming back. Like if you were starting over from scratch, like if Chambliss and Lacey had transferred to LSU, for say, and you were starting over with a new quarterback and all that, maybe you would go kind of outside and maybe find somebody that maybe could go different, like stylistically. I mean, what Ole Miss has been using has been working, and I think John David Baker is going to just keep extending that. But I, you know, also on the subject of depth, I mean, 9 games in the SEC, Ole Miss is going to play Louisville. If you're thinking about a playoff run, like they have turned over quite a bit of, like I said, receivers, and like what happens like if one of your projected replacements at tackle gets hurt and you're already digging deep into the bench. And that's true for any team, but I just think that's kind of why I didn't have them at one, is like all this change, all this new like depth issues maybe here or there. I do think their defense will be better this year, so maybe interested to see how that kind of push and pull, like if you're Golding, you want to keep your foot on the pedal to keep the offense prolific, but also maybe against Georgia, against Texas, like, hey, you want to keep your defense fresh because you're going to be going against teams that can beat you up in the trenches or hit you over the top with a big pass play. So interested to see how Golding plays that this year. That's it's one of the challenges now of getting to sit in the big seat, right? He's a defensive coordinator. He's got all these crucial decisions to make as head coach.
Yeah, that's a great point, Stephen. All right, so my number two, I'm not even going to say it because I'll just let you know it's Stephen's number one, even though I haven't seen his stupid list. Tell us who you got as the number one best offense in the SEC this year.
Mike, I decided to go with that team down in Austin, the Texas Longhorns. I haven't talked very, very much this offseason about Arch Manning, and I just want to take a second and just say how much better he played in the last half of last season. I know we haven't talked about the bowl game, but man, he was great. And I don't know if you saw in November too, man, he was great there. The rushing, the passing, it was all there. Of course, I'm joking around here because I enjoy this bit quite a bit. But I do look at this Texas team, Mike, and I see 5.7 yards per play last season in SEC-only matchups. They have a ton of improvement that they have to do. But I like the continuity of this side of the ball. Sarkisian is going to put together a good offense. A lot of pressure because of what they did in the portal and Arch Manning coming back. But I thought Arch was the quarterback I expected to see at the start of last season, later in the year. I like the 1-2 punch of Hollywood Smothers, Relique Brown. Also think Cam Coleman is going to unlock that passing game to another level. Also, I think for all the focus on Arch Manning and Cam Coleman, rightfully so, the offensive line is significantly better. They have better depth. They have a better starting five. And I think that will help all these pieces. Helps the run game, helps Arch Manning, better balance, better maybe big plays downfield. I think there's a lot to like about this Texas offense this year.
Hey, I can't disagree with anything you said, Stephen. Should be good.
Should, right?
Texas always should be good. Should be winning championships, yet they never seem to do it, Stephen. So, again, I put them number two. I'm not saying they're awful by any means, but they have regressed every year under Sarkisian in the last 3 years, despite having God's gift of football at quarterback. And before that, they had the highest rated recruit all time, Quinn Ewers, at quarterback. Yet, you know, excuses. I mean, Sarkisian put together last year's offensive line, didn't he?
Yeah.
Now he's putting together this one, and it's just going to be that much better. I don't know. I mean, if they were going to get rid of a coach, it probably should have been Flood, the offensive line coach. If you ask me, I think they got rid of the wrong coach. But a pressure is immense. Schedule's elite. I don't know, Steven. I don't think they're the best. I think we're giving them too much benefit of the doubt with all these transfers. Now, maybe they come in here and they're all amazing, but that rarely happens. Now, that they've paid top dollars and they've got the best of the best out there, but there could be a little bit of an acclimation period, I would think, for some of these transfers down in Austin. So, I don't know, Stephen. I just don't know. I think they'll come up just short. I think they'll be very, very, very good on offense. But I don't think I'm putting them number one.
Which transfer do you have the most confidence in for Texas to hit this year? Is it Cam Coleman?
Probably. But even he's got issues. You know, you ask an Auburn fan, they'll tell you how many passes he dropped. You know what I mean? Now, and again, I think his, if you want to call it lack of production, because he had production, but I think most of that was due to Hugh Freeze's idiotic offense and lack of quarterback play. You know, I think that haunted him, and neither one of those should hold him back this year. So, yeah, if I was going to answer that, I would think I would go Cam Coleman. I'm most confident in.
I think any hesitation that I have with Texas at one, it's the should word. It's like it should come together, right? The offensive line is deeper. It's better. They've got answers through the portal. Cam Coleman should do this. Relique Brown, Hollywood Smothers should do this. But I'm also like a little bit haunted by like what happened last year. And I think I didn't probably put enough stock into the offensive line concerns. And that's kind of like why I'm kind of like going to the opposite direction this year. It's just looking at it on paper saying, oh, okay, they're deeper and they've got a better starting five. So I understand the hesitation here because it's like a lot of should, it's a lot of potential. They've got to live up to it. But I think all the ingredients are there. I think this year's case to be the best offense in the SEC is stronger in the preseason than it was last year. It was a lot of more hype around Manning, whereas I think he delivered on that down the stretch this year, last year.
All right, number one, I think you screwed it up, Steven. Shout out Gooder and the boys. Come on, Steven. They've got continuity at quarterback, offensive coordinator, offensive line. They're one of the most experienced returning in the conference. Number one in passing production returning, number one in rushing production returning. Give me them dogs, Steven. Mike Bobo, let him cook. Get out the way. Gunnar Stockton, year two. He was pretty solid, too. I mean, his numbers are statistically outstanding, and I get what you're saying. I mean, it's fair to question where they're at with receivers, but they've got a lot of talent there as well. Just need some of those guys to hit. They've got some tight ends, which I seemingly always have down in Athens. So, you know, I think the offense will run through the running game and these tight ends. And if Gunnar can, man, it's just, if he could play like he did against Tennessee, Georgia's going to win it all. You know what? So I got more confidence in Georgia, believe it or not, than I do Texas to have an outstanding offense. I think, I don't understand the people discounting Georgia and all their returning. I really don't. I think they've got all the pieces, and they should be the favorite out of the SEC to win the national championship, in my opinion.
I agree with that. I mean, Kirby's probably going to like print up all these preseason rankings and put them up around the facility. It is a little surprising to me that Georgia has been back-to-back SEC champion, and of course, what happened last year and the year before don't necessarily mean a whole lot. But like the path to win a national SEC title like goes through Athens at this point. And certainly, just look at what they bring back. It's a little surprising to me that they're not maybe getting more national buzz to be number one. The biggest hesitation for me, and I hate to like go back to it, is I just look at this receiving core and I see a lot of talent, but I see some questions. And just thinking how valuable like Zachariah Branch was and some of those other pieces, I think you can almost separate like Gunnar Stockton and the receivers. And I think it's like some people are going to wonder, is like Gunnar Stockton good enough to win a national title? I think he can be. And I think he individually will raise his game. But I think the question is like, are the receivers going to be consistent and good enough to win a national title? And I think those two things are kind of separated in my mind, if that makes sense. Like, I have confidence in Stockton. I like the talent in the receiver room, but I need to see it play out. And that's why I had them three, Mike, but I really don't see a ton of separation among those top three right now.
Hey, shout out, Carl. Appreciate you for the nice donation. But I'm questioning, Carl, if you just woke up from a coma since last December. Could the hatred for Kiffin's return to Neyland be eclipsed by Ole Miss game and over-under on golf balls at the 50? Hell no. I mean, we got Kiffin out here saying Ole Miss is racist, and, you know, we would have won the national championship if I was coaching. And, man, it's just been – I mean, it's gotten so bad. Kiffin had to get off social media. I didn't think we'd ever see that day. So there's no shot in hell the Kiffin return to Neyland is eclipsed. Is anything other than, yeah, I mean, it's LSU Ole Miss is like at an 11. I think LSU at Tennessee, that's going to be a hell of a game. And they'll be, you know, they'll play the golf ball, you know, stupid thing 20 times probably during that game. But I think that'll be old news. I don't think anybody will even care that Kiffin's back in Neyland.
I think Tennessee fans kind of gutted out with the Ole Miss game, like that crazy Ole Miss game a few years ago. I do think if you had to rank the level of like craziness, I do think the LSU Ole Miss game this year is probably going to surpass the crazy factor that the Ole Miss Tennessee game is. And that might be hard to do, Mike, but man, everything that Kiffin has been saying this offseason about Ole Miss, all of what, you know, just trying to get revenge. I mean, it just seems like I can't wait till we get to that week three, because now we got Brendan Sorsby coming back in week three when Texas Tech plays Houston. But oh, Lane Kiffin's going back to Oxford. It's going to be an amazing Saturday of football.
All right, Steven, speaking of amazing, who are the amazing defenses in this league? Let's go number five. Who do you got as a number five defense in the SEC?
Mike, I had a hard time deciding my last three spots, and eventually I settled on Alabama at number five. I think probably one of the biggest reasons why I gave Alabama the nod at number five was just the chance to have an elite secondary. Pass defense numbers, not necessarily like the yardage just doesn't necessarily mean like success, but Alabama gave up the fewest passing yards per game in the SEC last season. Three potential All-Americans in this safety, in this secondary: Keon Sapp, Bray Hubbard at safety, Xavien Brown at corner. You throw in Yanze Pierre getting after the quarterback, Caleb Woodson, the Virginia Tech transfer, solidifying the second level. The defensive line is a little bit of a concern for me, given their reliance so heavily on transfers. I know they like the added size maybe that those guys are going to bring. Third and fourth, the 2 years that Kane Womack has been defensive coordinator, Alabama has ranked third and fourth in the SEC in fewest yards per play. So this was kind of, I really like an elite secondary. I think Alabama's got one this year, and that's why they're five.
Yeah, hey, I like that pick, Stephen. But number five, I'm going LSU. Blake Baker's back. I think that may be the best move Kiffin made since he got hired. Continuity on the defensive side of the football. I don't think defense was the problem. I think clearly the offense was the problem in Baton Rouge last year. But it, you know, it kind of overshadowed with Brian Kelly getting fired and all the disaster that last season was. It overshadowed what a good defense we put together in Baton Rouge, and we brought a lot of those guys back. We've added via the transfer portal. The Boise State safety, I hear, is pretty incredible. So I think LSU is going to be really good. And if they make the playoff, it's going to be because that defense comes out ready to play first month of the season and gets us at least three wins this first month. I think that's going to be the ticket for LSU, because I just don't – again, I'm not high on the offense right out the gate, but I think the defense could be really good. And, again, top five in the Southeastern Conference.
That defense should give Kiffin time to find the right answers, because I do think it is going to take some time for this offense to come together. But that defense, and, you know, when they go to Oxford and they play Texas A&M, those two games are really huge for playoff positioning within the SEC. So be able to lean on a defense like the one LSU is bringing back. I like him in my top five as well, Mike. So I like the call to have him at five. But I was curious, keeping Blake Baker or staying off social media for a while, which one is a better offseason move by Kiffin?
Yeah, well, all right, maybe I might have to correct myself. Maybe it is staying off social media, because it doesn't seem like it was doing Kiffin any favors. You know what?
Do you think he's going to have the most boring SEC media days performance? You remember that commercial he did at Florida Atlantic? Like, maybe we just get like very boring, like monotone Lane Kiffin. Yeah.
Is that what he did? Right. No, I don't think you'd get any more boring than Coach DeBoring at Alabama. So I see what you're saying. Kiffin will let one slide or two. Yeah. He just can't let it go. So yeah, I would imagine the over under on Ole Miss references is probably like six for Kiffin. So yeah, no, he's going to let something slip for sure.
I thought Billy Napier was kind of like your, you know,
he was last year.
Yeah. Sleep number SEC coach.
Now it's all DeBoring. I'll tell you that.
Man, DeBoring's going to have to up his game this year with all the new faces on this Alabama defense. And number five in my ratings, he's going to have to show us a little bit of excitement there at SEC media days.
I think so. All right. So who you got as number four defense in the SEC?
I liked your call of LSU, Mike, because I got him at number four. And basically for one reason: in Blake Baker, I trust. I think this defense is going to be even better than last year. They were on the field. They were having to deal with an offense that wasn't very good. There was so much pressure on this side of the ball. They brought in T.J. Dottery and Prince Will from Ole Miss. I like them as kind of like tone setters for like culture building, your transitioning between staffs. Those guys were, you know, all SEC caliber players at Ole Miss. They're coming over to LSU. Also, Whit Weeks is back healthy. He was one of the top defenders in college football coming into last season, and had such an injury kind of riddled 2025. So I think just the combination of transfers, Blake Baker, Whit Weeks getting healthy. You mentioned Ty Benefield, the Boise State transfer. I also like DJ Pickett, that corner, to take a big step forward. So I just look at this group and I don't see a ton of weaknesses other than how long it takes like the new pieces to come together. But there's a lot of high level players on this defense that I think this should be one of the SEC's better defenses.
Hey, shout out Matthew. We appreciate your first time poster, long time listener. Boomer, appreciate you, Matthew. We're going to be talking some Oklahoma here in just a second. Yep. I bet you can believe that. So, I like a lot of what you had to say, Stephen. Again, that's, we both have LSU in the top five. You got them four, I got them five. So, yeah, I think we're right on the same page there. My number four, though, Stephen, a little bit of a gamble, perhaps. Give me A&M. And you said believe in Blake Baker, which I do, but this is me believing in Coach Elko, of course, because we've got a retooled defensive line. We've had to hit via the transfer portal, rebuild that, essentially. We've got banged up at linebacker this spring, but I like what we've got at defensive back, and I just have uber confidence in Coach Elko, year three, to field one of the better defenses. And he's a big believer in chaos and the havoc plays, getting to the quarterback, forcing turnovers. And I think that's going to basically be the entire tenure down there in College Station as long as Coach Elko is roaming the sidelines.
This defense for Texas A&M, I think just last year was just so much better for two reasons. They defended the pass better, but I also got to the quarterback more often. So, like, there's kind of a correlation between those two things. But I had Texas A&M at five, and I swapped them out for Alabama. So we're on the same kind of wavelength here. So essentially, I guess I would have them sixth. Sixth in the SEC, Mike, is probably still top 10 nationally. That's how close the margins are. You also, you mentioned all the new faces, and I kind of just go, I just trust Mike Elko. I mentioned before this offseason about Anton Saka they brought in from Northwestern. I think he could maybe be like the next Cassius Howell type player, that he comes in, this staff develops him, he takes off as maybe an all-SEC caliber defensive lineman. The secondary is going to be outstanding. I am a little bit worried about linebacker right now after the Samford injury in spring and kind of seeing where all that goes. But I think this is a defense that 22.1 points a game in SEC play last year. I think they're going to be just as good in 2026.
All right, so where would you go for your number three defense in the SEC?
Mike, I am very curious to see if you have this defense in your top five. I have Texas at three.
Of course you do.
And the biggest point of intrigue for me is Texas on defense was not that bad last year. Under 5 yards a play, 20 points a game. They weren't bad, but the hope has got to be Will Muschamp makes this defense elite. And just from a schematic style of play, I suspect they are going to be more aggressive with Will Muschamp. How does that translate? How long does it take the players to get comfortable with the scheme? But the talent is there. Colin Simmons, Rasheem Biles, the Pitt transfer at linebacker. I think he'll be one of the best linebackers in the SEC. They've got good defensive line depth. Bo Masco, the Rutgers transfer, going to be a stalwart at corner. I like a lot of the pieces. There's some new, there's some questions. We'll see if they can go from pretty good to elite, but all of the right ingredients are there for Texas, and they're my number three defense.
Steven, I'd be disappointed if I didn't see it coming. So, I get it. They probably should be, right, with all the talent they've got, and they've got arguably the best pass rusher in the country coming back. They're just got loaded with talent, but we say that every year. We say that every year, Stephen. I ain't buying it. Go out and earn it. I'm not going to just give it to you. I already gave it to your offense when I probably shouldn't have. I'm not going to give it to the defense too. Not without them earning it. I just can't do it. They're not in my top. They're not my top five.
Interesting. So you've had Texas A&M, and you had Texas A&M in your top five. I had them six, and now you don't have Texas in your top five. So I'm curious to see where you're going with these last couple selections, because I think the top two are pretty clear. We'll see you at three.
Well, real quick, though, Stephen, we've had a flurry of donations. So we appreciate you. Cousin Jared, he just gifted two memberships, one to Neuro Ultra and one to Jeffrey Williamson. And then we had Glenn Warsaw. He gifted Gatlin Bivens and Steven Up gifted IT Mac Pro. All of y'all, welcome to
the family.
Yeah. Thank you, Steven, for the assist. All right. So next. Well, you already talked about him, so it's somewhat anticlimactic. I'm going to Alabama, Steven. Uh-huh. I think you nailed it. I think Alabama's one of the more underrated defenses in the SEC. I think despite all the things negative things I've said about them this offseason, I am a big believer in the defense. You shouted out the secondary. They should be elite. I think Womack is doing a good job. Quite frankly, Steven, I've said it before. I'll say it again. Quite honestly, I'm surprised Womack is still there. I thought he was going to be a head coach, and specifically at Arkansas. So,
yeah,
you know, it remains to be seen. Maybe old Silver Fox will be better than Womack. Of course, you know, we're all in on Silver Fox these days, so let's hope he is. But I think Cade Womack, again, I think he did a hell of a job. And I thought he was a big reason why Bama made the college football playoff. And if they do it again, it'll be because of him and his defense. So I anticipate Alabama is going to be one of the best three defenses in the conference this year.
I was worried I was too high on them at five, just given the defensive line turnover. But it looks like my confidence wasn't high enough. So I'm a little surprised that you have them at three. But I do think there's kind of like a divide on the like top two seem pretty clear to me. Then three through like eight or so are all pretty close. And I think for some of the reasons that you mentioned about Alabama, like I love the secondary. I like what they did in the portal up front. We'll see how it all comes together. But Womack has done a great job with this defense. I don't anticipate that changing. And in fact, I think what's interesting is now in year three, a lot of those guys are your guys that you've brought into the program. So they may fit the scheme even better. Also in the big picture, Mike, as we're talking this offseason and you know, your feelings for some teams kind of like go up and down, like based upon reporting or whatever. I do think maybe I have a little bit more confidence in Alabama kind of growing over the offseason just because I do trust this defense. And I really believe that Keelan Russell is going to be a dynamic player. It's like, how soon can he get there? And so as we're talking this offseason, I'm kind of liking Alabama more and more. Maybe I'm crazy at this point.
Well, both things could be true, right? They could be better and you're still crazy. All right, top two. I think, again, I don't want to reveal anything. I haven't seen your top two, but I feel like we'll have a similar. Who do you got number two?
I've got Boomer Sooner, Mike, and this was a very, very difficult decision. Two or one for Oklahoma. This is one of the best defenses in the country. They were first in defensive success rate last season, 45 sacks. They only gave up over 30 points a game just twice. That was to Ole Miss and Alabama. Also, very easy to see this group and where it was going last year when Brent Venables took over the play calling. This group was significantly better once he took the play sheet. Five starters are back. Some other guys played a lot of snaps. You know, I think the starting group is very, very good. I can go defensive line, linebacker, secondary. They're all in my top 10 nationally. I do worry about the depth and also depth, and they were so good last year that because they lost a few pieces, I do wonder if they take maybe a small step back. Instead of giving up 15 points, they give up 18 points. So it's just hard to replicate that production and the depth. So I went with Oklahoma at two for those reasons.
Yeah, and it's funny, these rivalries, right, where it just blinds people. Shout out Simply. We appreciate all your donations. But he says one of the best defenses, unless they're playing Texas. I mean, they did a good job against Texas, didn't they? Wasn't it 20-something points, 23 points? Yeah. I could be wrong. But, again, that's allegedly against Sarkisian and God's gift to football and all these five stars. I mean, that's a pretty good performance in and of itself. It's not the defense's fault. The offense shit the bed. But I digress. I think everything you said is accurate, Steven. And can I be so bold as to say that I think Brent Venables is the best defensive coordinator in the country? Is that what's your thoughts on that?
I think I would agree with that. Yeah. I mean, I think it's hard sometimes to separate the head coach role in like DC. There's like some blurry lines of like some of these teams of who the play callers are, but I think I would put him one.
Yeah. I mean, forever it was Kirby, right? And then again, I know it's cheating because these guys are head coaches, but I think Brent Venables has surpassed even Kirby Smart, even though Georgia is elite on defense at times as well. But yeah, I mean, I think he's the best at defensive mind, and that's why I've got Oklahoma number two as well, which means I've got Georgia. I know I just said he's better than Kirby, but again, we're rating defense, it's not defensive coordinator. I got Georgia number one, and I assume you do as well.
I do too, Mike. And I want to bring this up real quick on Oklahoma, because we talked about the Texas game. Oklahoma gave up less than 5 yards of play against Texas last year. They also gave up less than 5 yards of play when they played Ole Miss. That is really, really good defense in this era of college football. So, yeah, like it's not always the defense's fault that teams lose. Like the offense also has to score. So I do have Georgia number one, Mike. I mean, I think when I go this defense, I mean, 8 starters are back. They rank second in the SEC in rush defense. The track record of Kirby Smart here. I would love to see Georgia get more pressure on the quarterback. They had only 20 sacks. Like, difference between pressure rate and sacks are different. I would like to see Georgia get some of those quarterbacks to the ground, create some more havoc plays. But, man, you just go through this depth chart, and you could do the same thing, too, with Oklahoma and the frontline starters and K.J. Bolden, Ellis Robinson, Elijah Griffin, breakout season, Quintavious Johnson, Gabe Harris. This group is loaded, and I think they're going to be even better than they were last season.
Yeah, I do too, Steve. I mean, you got to remember, it took them a while to find their footing on the defensive side of the football, and you know they were getting exposed a little bit, and then by the end of the season, well, until the Sugar Bowl, but they were elite. And even in the Sugar Bowl, I mean, if you actually go back and watch that, I mean, it was like, my word, some of these plays Trinidad was making, you know, that I still don't know how he made a lot of them. And hey, I think sometimes, you know, good offense, there, what do they say? There's just no defense for perfect plays at times, you know, yeah. And I think that was a case that day as well. So yeah, with who they're bringing back and the depth, and they even had guys that were banged up last year at the end of the last season. You know, I think they can. Now, again, literally any of these units, any teams, if they suffer significant injuries, you know, they're not going to be as good. But I think there's few teams that can manage to lose guys to the degree that Georgia's defense can, if that makes any sense at all. Kind of rambling here, but I just think they can surrender those and still be really, really good.
I think, you know, obviously I think it was a Gabe Harris was out for the Sugar Bowl. They had some other guys banged up. I feel very, very good about their front line and also their depth. So to kind of piggyback what you're saying is, I think we have to assume that in a 9-game SEC slate, I mean, certainly there's going to be injuries on a normal 12-game slate, but you got to have good depth to navigate the SEC slate. I think they're 22. They've got a very, very strong group overall with the returning production, some of the guys that are going to take a step forward. So I think the depth for this defense is in a good spot. Maybe you could nitpick here or there, kind of like you could do every team, but they're in a really, really good spot defensively.
Hey, shout out Matthew, another donation. Boomer, number one defense again. And Venables, we trust. For now, that offense better do something quick. So, I mean, I get it. Oklahoma very well could be best defense in the conference. It wouldn't surprise me at all. I mean, I don't see much of a separation between Georgia and Oklahoma. Token, we appreciate you, buddy. Who wins? The SEC, the Rebels. Who goes 13-0? The Rebels. Who's number one offense and defense? Also, the Rebels. End of the story. Dicker. Man, that'd be wild if they got that better. You know what?
Man, I actually like the Ole Miss defense to be one of the most improved in the SEC. I think the transfer additions that they got at linebacker, some of the other pieces help solidify that group. So I think kind of on either one of those questions, like, you know, I know we had Oklahoma too. I wouldn't be surprised if they finish one. I debated very heavily 1-2 Georgia, Oklahoma. I feel very good about Ole Miss as a top five offense right now. I think they are an improving defense, kind of just outside my top five. But I do suspect that group is going to be better than we saw last season.
And Steven, I saw a comment. I apologize. I didn't see who said it, but someone was kind of bewildered that we didn't have Auburn as a top five defense after, you know, they were so good under DJ Durkin last season. They're not even in the top half returning the production. And that's kind of it right there. That, well, I mean, that's a big piece of it for me. They lost a lot of key contributors off that defense. And I'm not saying they're devoid of talent, because they certainly still got a lot of talent. Excuse me. I think Atkins may be the best linebacker in the conference. So they're going to be good. But the same thing I said, Stephen, about John David Baker at Ole Miss and the tempo and the pace, we're going from... Now, it's a credit to Durkin, right? But we're going from, you know, three and outs and punting 60% of the time, which is going to hurt my argument here, because they were facing a lot of snaps themselves. But we are going from that to lightning quick offense, as long as it's productive. But what's that going to do? You're going to face more snaps, because the offense is going to be going up and down the field, perhaps, as long as it's effective. And I highly think it will with Brown and Golish there now. But point being, you've got less depth and you're going to be facing more snaps. So I just, if Auburn can maintain that same level of defense, they're going to be incredible this year. I don't have much belief that they can match that. That doesn't mean they're going to be awful. I did consider them top five, and this may stun you, Stephen, but I didn't give it a ton of consideration, but I did consider Auburn top five offense with Brown and Golish. For them, it's more about offensive line is kind of holding me back from that. But the point being, I think Auburn's going to be very balanced. I mean, wouldn't it be better to have two top eight units than to have a top four defense and a 16 offense? I mean, yeah. I would rather have two top eights, and I think that's what Auburn potentially has this year.
I think the challenge with putting Auburn in the top five on defense, at least for me, is I think, number one, they lose a lot on the defensive line, and especially the secondary. Like, I'm kind of worried about corner. Maybe I'm overly concerned about it for them, but they are relying heavily on a lot of transfers in those two groups. It's a good news, kind of bad news for DJ Durkin, because I think there's definitely a trust factor in his ability to build a good defense this year, and I think he will. I just think it's so hard to look at last year's starting group, what they lose and what they're bringing in, and say they're probably going to match that. The good news is he's probably got more offensive support this year. The bad news is he's got a lot of new faces all up and down his defense. So I could see this group getting better over the course of the season, and especially since they have more support offensively. Like I said, Mike, I think this team's going to make a bowl game. I think they're due to take a step forward under Alex Golish. But for me, top five defense was probably a little bit too high. I had them kind of outside of that kind of cluster of teams in 6, 7, and 8 that I was considering on defenses.
Hey, shout out to James. Appreciate you, buddy. South Carolina to the Natty. I don't know if he's talking football, but I assume he is. I don't think Brendan Sorsby is crazy enough to place that bet. I'll just say that. How's that sound to you, Steven?
That's bold. I mean, I like bold off-season predictions. You know, we're all shooting our shot for the upcoming year. I don't know that I would. National championship for South Carolina seems a little bit too risky, too bold for me. Now,
what's best case, Stephen? Best case, everything breaks right. You know, try to be a super, super optimistic. If everything, all the questions you have about Carolina get answered, for Cousin James here, Where would you ballpark that record for Carolina?
Mike, would it be crazy to think about maybe like 10 wins for this team?
No, I mean, the fact that Vanderbilt just did it, no, I don't think it's crazy at all.
And they're just one season removed from like making that run to the college football playoff. And after that win against Clemson, they were one of the first teams out. I think if you make a schedule argument, you have to like that Texas A&M and Georgia in November come to your place. And by November, you would have to figure that Kendall Briles and Lenora Sellers and the offensive line questions, they've sorted through those. I also think like, hey, you could look at this and say road matchups, Alabama, Florida, those two teams have, we think they're going to be fine, but what if the question marks are greater or more of a concern than we thought in the preseason? I think the X factor in this, Mike, is really just how good can Lenora Sellers, or how far can he take this team? Because 2 years ago, he was good in, or 2024, he was good enough to take this team all the way to nearly the playoff. If that Lenora Sellers shows up and some of these other preseason questions are erased, then I think we're talking South Carolina back in the playoff mix again this year.
Hey, shout out Gamecock winner. SC definitely finishes top five offense and top five defense. Your apprehension is exactly why the Cox continue the disrespect. Wow. I mean, these Gamecocks, Steven, they are fired up. I love it. And James back for another one. As long as we beat Clemson, I'm happy. Yeah, we have missed you, Carolina fans. Most of y'all disappeared last September. It's been that long. So we appreciate all the Carolina love. But yeah, I mean, let me add to that everything you just said, Steven. Sellers. I mean, it wasn't that long ago where this guy was like, man, shoe-in first-round pick. Many people across the country, you know, were thinking he was going to be Miami's top option to go, you know, and just, I mean, we had Brooks Austin. He does a hell of a job. Anybody that follows his stuff. We had him on at Media Day, Stephen. He said, in terms of running ability, he's as good of a runner as Ashton Jeanty. And we're talking like one of the best running backs in recent college football history. And he was not sliding him as a thrower either, but just, you know, these were the comparisons that people were throwing on Sellers. If that Sellers can come back, there's absolutely no reason that Carolina can't be the biggest surprise team in the conference this year.
I agree. I mean, I think I had them just outside my top 25 in the power rankings at the end of spring practice. I could easily talk myself into them being in the top 25 because I do think Sellers is going to rebound. My biggest issue with this team is going to be that offensive line. And like, if you could tell me how many games Jakarius Peak is going to start, you know, I might be, you know, willing to give them a bump in the power rankings right now into the top 25. But when you're looking at like sleeper teams, to me, the first thing I always go to is who's got that quarterback who can take you from like here to here. And it feels like Sellers is that kind of quarterback. I mean, you know, I think Brooks kind of nailed it on the rushing. I think can Kendall Briles make it easier for him in the passing game? And I think he can. I like the growth we saw to Nick Harbor, some of the other weapons that they have. So there's a lot to like. And I think Clayton White always does a good job on the defensive side of the ball. So there's a lot going in the right direction. It's just for me is that offensive line is going to be the biggest X factor for this team from here until we kick the season off.
And then shout out to Michael Dunlap. So he's a Gamecock. He says that's delusional. So we get the full spectrum of Carolina fan tonight. And shout out Carl. Appreciate you, buddy. Carolina, what's next? Mizzou fans talking smack. Ooh. Well, hey, Missouri's had their number here more often than not. So
might as well reignite the rivalry between Columbias, right?
Yeah. Hey, all right. So let me ask you, speaking of Mizzou, did you, I briefly considered it, but perhaps them being top five offense, did that enter in? I mean, again, Hardy, we don't know. That would be assuming Hardy's full go. I'm trying not to get caught up in the Austin Simmons hype because this is like multi years of this, and he's got more interceptions than touchdowns. Now I think that'll quickly change, but again, I'm not anointing him till he's actually got to do it. You know,
I was going to mention this, Mike, because we did the SEC predictions last week from the magazine, and I actually was talking to myself this week, as one does when like you're thinking about these things. Like I was actually thinking, man, am I too low on Missouri? Like maybe I should have had him a few spots higher in the top 25. So maybe I'm like the worst person to ask about this because I guess a growing optimism. I had them, you know, like on the offensive side, like Tennessee, Oklahoma, I think Alabama, Missouri were kind of the next year. I also think Florida is a pretty interesting offensive sleeper this year with some of the pieces. But I think not knowing what the status is of Ahmad Hardy for the entire season and the potential but untapped ability of Austin Simmons, that kept them out of my top five right now.
Are there any other teams that maybe we haven't hit much on that you were considering for either one of your lists?
I didn't consider them for top five offense, but I did wonder what's the ceiling for this Mississippi State offense if things really like take off under Kamario Taylor.
I'm glad you said that because I think that was one that I did consider for the top five. And just with Jeff Lebby, year three, getting this program hopefully headed in the right direction. I mean, this is make or break for me. I don't know if it is for them. It should be. I think it's already past break. But again, we're all in. We're here, right? So we gotta keep rowing that boat. Shout out that stupid Minnesota coach. But again, speaking of them, that's who we play, right? Week two. So I think there's an outstanding shot if Kamario Taylor, which is what you just asked me, if he takes off, that Mississippi State's a top five offense in this conference. I don't think that's crazy.
I don't think so either, because I think there is, you know, to go back to what we talk about with like Lenora Sellers, is what quarterback is out there that has the chance to kind of like completely change the dynamic? Like what if Taylor is just that good? And I think there is that enormous upside. There is a world where he reaches that this year. I'm probably most worried about the offensive line at Mississippi State, but also his mobility kind of could overcome some of those things. Trust in Lebby to figure it out. And also playmakers like Brennan Thompson's speed was so valuable, but I think Lebby can find some guys to run downfield and stretch the field and they'll figure it out. So I think they probably have a wide range of outcomes, but I think the upside is like top five, close to top five, just because they have the quarterback who can really change this conversation.
Hey, shout out Sean Boober in Mateer. We trust. I think I trust more of that defense. But again, I like John Mateer as well. Hey, and going back to keep plugging this interview I did, John Mateer, David Hale pointed out that I think he played eight top 25 defenses last year. Given what little they had around him, particularly at receiver and tight end, and a lack of running game at times. You know, I wonder how many people are kind of factoring that in when it comes to John Mateer's lack of overall success statistically, and of course the injury as well. But I mean, his point was it's just hard to evaluate a guy mm-hmm. when you're facing that many top defenses after he loved what he brought at Washington State, but he doesn't know which is the real Mateer. Is it the Washington State? Is it last year? Is it somewhere in between?
That is a big question, because I think on paper, I had Oklahoma, you know, I had Tennessee at six in the offensive ratings. I had Alabama, Oklahoma up next in some order. And I just, the first thing I noted was I loved the potential for this offensive line, but then I kept coming back to, I think Mateer is going to be better this year, but I don't know where that ceiling's going to be. And he is a really hard quarterback to evaluate, because Washington State played kind of an independent schedule the year that he was awesome. Then he looked really good at the start of last year, when he had that big win over Michigan, and then he gets hurt. So, like, there's a lot of variables here. Tougher conference, better defenses, change of surroundings, injury, all these great defenses week in and week out. You know, was he, even though he was back, how healthy was he? There's a lot of variables, I think he's a really hard quarterback to evaluate. I think his ceiling is much higher than what we saw last year. I think the question is, you know, where is that ceiling? Because I don't really trust the Washington State performance. I think there's probably some regression off of that in the SEC, just because it's tougher to put up those numbers in this type of conference with the defenses you're facing.
Hey, shout out James. He said Mississippi State is going to be upset September 19th. Well, at Carolina, I would think Carolina is going to be favored in that game, wouldn't you, Stephen?
Maybe it
just means they'll be upset if because they're going to lose, but
right. Yeah. I think South Carolina is favored in that game. I think the one kind of game that I've kind of circled for South Carolina is, and you know, we go back a few years ago, they beat Texas A&M at home, you know, Saturday night, like November 7th, South Carolina hosts Texas A&M. Like, they get Tennessee at home as well. Like, there's some opportunities for this home schedule for South Carolina to pick off maybe some of these teams.
Nira Ultra, Mississippi State can be upset. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know how much expectations they have. I mean, I wish they had more. It's kind of sad to sit here and joke. Mississippi State used to be one of the most proud programs in the conference, but it's not been that way here lately.
They should not lose to Louisiana Monroe on September 5th, Mike. If they lose to Louisiana Monroe, we might need to have a hot seat change of coach discussion after that September 5th game. I do think that September 12th game you mentioned against Minnesota, that's a pretty big one, I think, for Jeff Lebby in this tenure, because, you know, Minnesota's been pretty solid, 7, 8, 9 wins. If you go up to Minneapolis, get a big win in week two, got a chance to kind of change the conversation here about where this is going in Jeff Lebby's third season.
Well, and it could have some implications, right, for a playoff too.
Yeah.
Because you want SEC versus Big Ten. You got to win as many of those as you can. I don't know how those will truly factor in to any kind of playoff discussion seeding wise, or maybe just even the last team in, but I think all these SEC versus Big Ten games are going to be scrutinized, and that's going to be chief among them. If Mississippi State can beat Minnesota, I think that'll really help the conference.
It helps from a perception standpoint too, because like you said, they're going to be evaluating like 8-4s and 7-5s. I mean, should say, if we don't trust the committee to rank 12, we definitely shouldn't trust them to rank 24 in the playoff. But it does matter for just conference evaluation. Evaluating like where the depth is, like team strength, like if Mississippi State knocks off or plays close to some of these other teams, to me, all that should be evaluated. And I hope the committee would too. So yeah, huge for conference perception. Also, Oklahoma and Michigan early in the season, really, really important for Big Ten SEC bragging rights and potential playoff stuff too.
Mizzou fan says, Steven, the only offense to talk about. Mizzou. Yeah, and again, I had an interview this weekend as well with Cody Goodwin, Power Mizzou, where we discussed, you know, could this be the best offense Drink has put together in Columbia? What would be your thoughts on that, Steve? Do you think this could be his best offense to date in Columbia?
I think if Simmons reaches his potential, that seems pretty likely. And that also assumes that Ahmad Hardy is playing the bulk of the season. And Jamal Roberts is very good, but Ahmad Hardy is very special. I just think, just boils down for me, is like, how far does Austin Simmons comes along? That probably determines like where this offense fits this year, but also historically for Eli Drinkwitz.
And then Mizzou fan has outdone himself. Steven gifted 50 memberships. Good night. So it looks like right now, we're probably going to be doing some Mizzou fall camp previews next week. So I'm going to tally up all these donations and share what we got this. But man, you guys have been very generous. So let me run through these, Stephen. These are all the members. This may take an hour, but Mizzou fan gifted here. Coincidence Central, like that name. Abram Matthews, Nan Nan Nancy, The Volunteer Sloth, Bama Bob, Shagadelic Spy. That's awesome. Travis Heath, Robert Alexander, James Ruth, Balls Mahoney, Evan Randolph, Big 9945, Cold Boy, Tyler Adams, 225 Made Four, Fletcher Boy, Balls by Fitty, UK's Duddy, Jason Franken, Bufa Dez, Wildcat Nuts, Braskel Rascal, Rick James, Swift and Nesson, Daniel Figueroa, Palmero, J.M. Scott, Reed Harrison, Arkwood, Little Rock Vol, Big 12 Knights, Cousin Shane, what? Roger Woods, Bobble Cochran, Mark Walken, St. Louis Mac, Rebel Heckler, Chris V. I think that's all of y'all. Welcome to
the family.
Yeah, shout out. Mizzou fan, we appreciate you, buddy. And then Carl getting in here on the action, too. I'm getting tired of reading all these. All right, shout out Carl. Mizzou fan bought in more cousins than the average Alabama wedding. Hell yeah, Carl. Way to kick them while we can here. You know what?
Carl, that is brilliant. I was also going to say, Mizzou fan, that is a very, very nice tribute to how many points Missouri is going to score in the first half against Arkansas Pine Bluff. So appreciate you.
All right, Steven, anything else before we hop off?
Mike, we kind of talked about this at the beginning, but man, it's early June and look at all the crazy stuff going on in the world of college football. So who knows what next week and the weeks after will bring, but appreciate always great to hang out with you and the cousins and talk some ball. And as always, appreciate the support for the magazine too.
Absolutely. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. We'll be back with Cousin Shane tomorrow to do our first fall camp preview series. We're going to be doing Georgia, Tennessee, and Ole Miss this week. And then we'll be counting up these donations to see where we get for the following week. But until then, we'll catch you on the next one. Bye-bye.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.